Blog Talk Radio.
We are the UR Tennis Network. Our mission is to be the voice of tennis. We enlist a team of passionate enthusiasts to promote our sport. We strive to bring interesting perspectives on the many spins of tennis. Our goal is to provide the learners of our sport with current news and information from many angles. We seek active participation from communities interested in tennis, but tennis is not interested in them. We are expanding our outreach. Tennis is a true lifetime sport that needs to be talked about, and the UR Tennis Network pledges to pursue this idea relentlessly.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Parenting Aces radio show on Blog Talk Radio's UR Tennis Network. I'm your host, Lisa Stone, and we have another fantastic show for you today. We're going to be talking college tennis and some of the interesting aspects of college tennis, such as the new format, marketing the matches better, and boosting attendance. We're going to talk about officials and what's involved with having officials on the court at the college matches and the coach's role. And I think you're going to find it really interesting. We have a great, great guest today. We have Coach Adam Herendine, who's the head coach at Presbyterian College. He's the men's coach, I should specify. And what's really cool about Adam is not only is he now the head coach, he, prior to becoming head coach, was the assistant coach, and prior to that was actually on the team at Presbyterian and was a very valuable member of the team. And he is not that old. He graduated from college in 2009, so he's not that far removed from the college recruiting process himself, and has offered to talk with us some about that piece of the pie too, about how the recruiting works and what a coach is looking for and how parents can help and what the players themselves need to be doing to get on the radar of the various coaches. And just to give you a little background on PC, PC is a Division I school. It's, you know, what is referred to as a mid-major. They are in the Big South Conference and have done really, really well. We actually have a couple friends that play for Coach Adam and another friend that's going to be playing for him starting next year. So I know firsthand from talking to these young men that they absolutely love playing for him. So without further ado, let me bring Adam on the line and we can start chatting. Adam, are you here?
I am here. Thanks so much for having me, Lisa.
Thanks so much for coming on. I'm really, really looking forward to our conversation today, especially since this new little format experiment has recently ended. And thank goodness, hopefully everybody can go back to business as usual with scoring and order of play and warm-ups and all of that stuff. But I'm really anxious to pick your brain a bit on the PC experience with the new format, what you saw, what your players saw, and you know, what you are hearing in the grapevine in terms of what's going to happen moving forward. So thanks so much for taking time out. I know you're coming off a rough weekend. You guys had a tough loss this weekend.
We did. Yeah, happy to be here. We had won a bunch of matches in a row. Hadn't lost in about a month and a week, 5 weeks, I guess, and took a tough loss yesterday. So we're picking up the pieces, trying to figure out what we got to do to get better, to get where we want to go. And but happy to be here.
Well, I'm glad to have you. And I know before we went on the air, you said that you were not in a good mood after the loss, but really trying to learn from it and help the guys learn from it to pick up the pieces and move forward. What do you say to a team after a tough loss like that, especially coming on the heels of such a nice win streak?
That often depends. Usually my goal is to say as little as possible, because we always talk about we're trying to get better. We just worry about the end of the season. We're not worried about the beginning, especially the non-conference matches, which is what yesterday was. But I usually tell the guys I'm going to say as little as I can to help us feel like a team, and we're going to think about it overnight because I'll be a lot more rational with my thoughts. And, you know, losing hurts, and it's supposed to hurt. I think one of the problems with this format is you can, it doesn't hurt as bad because it, you didn't invest as much. So the more you invest, the more it hurts. And we invest a lot, and so when we lose, we don't enjoy it, but it makes us better, and we hopefully will learn from it and be a lot better for our next match.
Well, talk to us a little bit about your experience with the new format. How many matches did you guys end up playing under that new format?
Well, I was a little bit sneaky and tried to get out of as many as possible. So when the format was announced, I guess when the first format was announced, that was the short ad scoring, so you go to deuce and then you go to one ad. I emailed everyone that we played before the National Indoors and said, I think this is terrible for the game. It's terrible for our preparation for the end of the season, which is, once again, all I care about, is who our guys are going to be in 20 years because of their experience playing here, and then, you know, how we do at the end of the season. All that other stuff, we're just building towards that. And so we got out of a bunch of matches. We played traditional format as early as possible, but we did play two matches under the ITA format, and then we also played another match under what they call the 5-1 format, which is simultaneous play, one doubles match worth 2 points, and then five singles. And we played that with regular scoring, but it's all the matches at the same time. So we've played, I guess, three formats this year. So at this point, the guys are just trying to figure out what format we're playing and what to do when they get on the court. Are they playing ad? They play no ad? All that. So we've played three different formats this year.
Wow. And it's early in the season.
Right. Yes. Yeah. Yeah, we played three formats in our first five matches or something like that, first four matches.
Holy cow.
So very, very confusing for the guys, for sure.
Yeah.
And even for the officials. I mean, we went out to play a match. We played our first conference match. We have a team in our conference. It's a little further north, and so they like to come down early in the season. So we played our first conference match, which was one of our first traditional scoring matches. And the players go out and start warming up, and the refs are like, whoa, 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 you can't warm up with your opponent. You have to stop. And me and the other coach are like, no, we're done with that. This is a conference match, you know. And so the refs don't know what's going on. The players don't know what's going on. All the fans we're getting out to our matches are trying to figure it out. And it's been a confusing thing for everybody. And I guess the analogy I would use is you don't see college football experimenting for the first 5 weeks of the season with what they're doing, and so it's just very confusing for the guys.
Yeah, I would say, and I was going to say for the fans as well, I mean, people that know tennis and come out and have an expectation of what they're going to see out there, I'm guessing we're a bit surprised by, you know, these format manipulations, I maybe is a good word, I don't know.
I would say it's a good word because it's strong. That would be how I would feel about it. But they were definitely, they were confused. Fortunately, you know, our players who aren't playing are up there trying to explain to them. But the more and more people you have out, the more confused they get. And so that's a bit of the process as well.
And when you did play the experimental format, did you notice that the matches went more quickly?
The matches went exponentially faster. We played two teams. Both teams were on the road. We played at Clemson, who I believe is 21 in the country right now, and then we played at Davidson. And both of those matches were in the format. And the doubles point in those matches, all the matches were 6-3, 6-4, or even we had a couple tiebreakers at 5 also, 6-5. And the doubles point was well under 30 minutes. You know, we had a doubles match in one of our matches that was 15 minutes long. I think a match is a strong term for anything that's 15 minutes. So the doubles was a blink of an eye. And with the no warm-up, the no warm-up is a bigger problem for me for the doubles just because of the big serves in the men's game. You miss your first two returns, the guy holds it love, and all of a sudden you haven't made a ball going into your first service game, which there are some benefits there for the guys to learn from, but the doubles was way too short. And then the singles was much, much shorter as well. Both the matches we played were very competitive. We lost to Clemson. We won six sets, so it was and we only played on four courts, so it was still a reasonable length match. But the matches are far too short, in my opinion. I think that one of the points of tennis is the physicality of the sport and the toughness of it, and then the mental toughness of the sport. And if you look at our record last year, we won a bunch of matches at the end of the year, and we didn't win those matches until the end. And I just think we were fitter and a little bit tougher. And those are the wins I take pride in. I don't take pride in, you know, just being better than somebody. Anybody can coach a team when you're better. It's when you have to really battle. Those are the ones that I remember and that my team remembers.
Sure. And, I mean, it's interesting. I was telling you before we went live, my son played a tournament this weekend, and they used the 10-point breaker in lieu of a third set in the main draw singles. And this was you know, one of our higher level Southern tournaments. And I had no idea when he signed up for the tournament that that was what they were going to be doing. And, you know, it's when you're watching that and you know your player has put the work in off the court to be fitter, to be stronger, to have more endurance, it all gets, you know, comes down to 10 points, it's pretty frustrating, I would think, as a coach.
It's really frustrating for us. I mean, we don't play – I kind of tell our guys, if we're playing a 10-point breaker, then the match is already over because we're about the team match. But it's so frustrating to see these guys absolutely battle and then to go to a 10-point breaker. And like I was telling you before the show started, it's tough as a coach because in your head you know that the 10-point breaker doesn't really show who's the better player, but you can't let your player believe that. They have to believe that they still have the expectation to figure the match out and to work through it, even though it's a 10-point breaker. And it's a tough balance as a coach because I don't think it's right. If I had my choice, we would play out all three sets even when the match is decided because at that point the fans can leave. Because the college tennis is for the kids, in my opinion. And so I think we should play it out because that's when you get better is the third set. So that's kind of my personal opinion there.
Yeah, well, you and I are in agreement on that one for sure, for sure, for sure. So what's going to happen moving forward, do you think? I mean, is the ITA and, well, USTA now has their fingers in all this too. Are they going to come back to you coaches and get some input, or what are you hearing out there?
Well, at this point, I got an email last week, and they're going to send out some surveys and let a lot of people do the surveys. And there's a lot of mixed reviews out there. There's a surprising number of coaches, I think, that actually like this format. And it's the coaches you would kind of expect to probably like the format. It's the coaches that are, you know, at the Ivy League schools who maybe can't play as long. It's a big benefit to them to play shorter matches because they're at Ivy League schools and their kids, you know, probably have to study a little harder. Not that our kids don't study extremely hard here, but I think there's some benefits there for them. And so I'm actually very nervous about what they're going to come down with because I think that they've created, whether there's smoke first or fire first in this instance, there's a lot of debate over. I know we've lost a lot of programs over the years, but I don't believe the format's the issue. But I think they've created enough smoke so that now we're going to have to change. If we don't change at this point, what I'm being told is the athletic directors are going to make a decision on what they think is best. And I'm kind of to the point where I believe that's true. So I'm at a little different place than I was this time last year. This time last year I was like, no, we need to leave it. It's fine. This is what we're going to do. Unfortunately, I think that there's been so much awareness raised. I think that we're going to be forced to change. It's just a matter of how much we change and what we're willing to give up. But for me, the scoring format is what makes tennis special and what makes it sacred and what makes those long matches, those battles, are what makes it fun. And my first year, we were the 7th seed going into the conference tournament, and the first round we beat the 2 seed at their place, and the match was almost 4.5 hours. And the next day we came back and beat the 3 seed in the semifinals, and the match was almost 4.5 hours. And my team will never forget that. I know the matches were long. My wife was actually, we were just about to get engaged at this point, and she was there for the whole first match and was just wondering when the thing was going to end. But that's not what the kids are playing for. My guys will remember that match so much more fondly and love their experience so much more because they battled for 4.5 hours, and they were the tougher team at the end than if they played for 2 hours and won in a 10-point breaker or a no-add point. That's just how we feel about it.
Yeah, I'm with you. I mean, And I'm one of those fans that I want to be there at the bitter end. I want to see who's, you know, who's crippled and who's still battling, even, you know, cramping and everything else. And it's not kind of a sick, you know, sense of I don't know, fandom. It's more, to me, that's the pure nature of the sport. It is a battle to the death. And you know, I enjoy seeing who's got it and who can hang.
Absolutely. It's the like you said, the pure nature of the sport. I mean, tennis is a sport that's always been followed by purists. My problem with all this format stuff is we're trying to attract people who aren't tennis fans to tennis by changing what tennis is. And I think that the scoring format is what makes tennis special. And so, yeah, you're going to attract – we're going to have more people standing out watching our matches, but they're not going to be tennis people who are actually there. They're going to be there because we're doing some promotion or because we're winning. They're not there for tennis. And I think that's a problem. I think we're selling the sport short by just changing just to attract people who don't actually like tennis. So I've been telling people, we don't have a college tennis problem. I think we have a tennis problem. I think we don't have enough true fans of the sport. And so it's not just at the college tennis level. It's at all levels.
Well, and it's interesting because, I mean, you know, your prediction is what happens in college tennis is going to end up trickling down into the juniors, which, you know, thank goodness for my kid. He's almost at the end of that. But what will be interesting is to see how it's received at the junior level. I mean, you know, from having the Parenting Aces site and you know, engaging with parents pretty much every day, I have a pretty vocal set of followers, and it'll be real interesting to see how they react if these rules trickle down. One of the issues, as you said, is attracting fans, and one of the problems that we see at the junior level is where the tournaments are played, there's nowhere for fans to come and watch at the junior level. So, you know, and it's not, I mean, most college matches are free, right? I mean, do you guys charge admission?
Almost all. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. No one's charging admission for regular season matches.
Right. And so why the need for the additional people in the stands? It's not driving revenue. I don't really understand. None of it makes a lot of sense to me. Maybe you can explain it.
Well, I think we're tied in with the shift of college athletics to the revenue-generating sports. Because you can generate so much revenue through football and basketball, that's what athletic departments want. And so in the past, you had a tennis or a cross-country or a golf team because it was cheap. You know, you could fully fund a men's tennis team with 4.5 scholarship, you know, which in the real world, that's not 4.5 scholarships worth of real money to the school. That costs the school very little. And, the coaches are much cheaper. So in the past, you had tennis because it was cheap. But now the schools want sports to generate revenue. And tennis is just not doing that. And so at the very least, they're saying, hey, at least have some visibility. At least have 500 people watching you play, I think is their goal. And so I think there's just a shift as a whole in college athletics to, hey, there's money to be had out there. So let's put our money into sports that are going to generate us money. Whereas tennis is bringing a lot of great things to institutions, but one thing we're not bringing is instant revenue. I think we're graduating a lot of great students who are going to give back and bring in great visibility to the school in other ways, but we're not bringing the revenue, which is what they're trying to create at this point.
So are we headed down a path that's going to do away with every non-revenue sport at the college level? I mean, that's heartbreaking if that's the case.
Well, this is a little bit of a touchy subject, but I think with Title IX, I do think that the men's sports are in trouble. I think women's tennis is pretty safe, but with Title IX, schools are saying, hey, we're going to put our money into men's sports, especially that are going to make money. We have to have the women's scholarships to offset our football and basketball. So women's tennis is a great sport to have because it's 8 scholarships. That's a lot for such a small sport. But I'm very concerned for the men's tennis, men's golf, men's cross country, even men's track. You hear a lot of programs like that being cut right now.
That's awful. All right. Well, a lot to think about and a lot to keep an eye on over the coming weeks for sure. I'm just glad the experiment's finished and everybody can get back to business as usual.
I'm
looking forward to some regular tennis from here on out till the NCAAs and all the conference championships.
Absolutely.
Well, so one of the things that kind of sparked my interest in your program this year is you have really made a very concerted effort to fill the stands at your matches. And you started a program called Pack the Pondo and are doing all sorts of great social marketing and otherwise marketing of your team and your matches. Can you share with us, you know, how you came up with the idea for that and you know, how it's going so far and what your plans are moving forward?
Sure. We, to be honest, filling the stands is not something that's ever been a priority of mine. As a player, I just wanted to play. And as a young coach, I'm still a young coach, but even as a younger coach, I was like, hey, I just want to play. And then what I started to realize is, especially with these kids that are coming up, they want to play in front of fans. So it's important for recruiting to be able to say, hey, this is how many people we're playing in front of. Come watch our match and see all these people watching us. But it's also important for the school. You know, if our president drives by the tennis courts and he sees a couple hundred people out, he suddenly goes, okay, not only is that program being successful, not only are they graduating student-athletes that are doing great things and having a great grade point average, but they're also loved by the school. That makes us very hard to reduce the funding of, and it makes it very easy to increase the funding because, hey, people love this team. Let's keep taking care of them so they can keep doing well. And so I didn't really start thinking too much about this until at the ITA convention this year when David Roditi from TCU, Texas Christian, was talking about what they were doing. And I thought, we can do this. This is going to take some work on my part. It's not exactly what I want to do. My mistake it was believing, okay, my job is a tennis coach. I'm supposed to coach tennis. But if I don't do some other things outside of taking care of our athletes and coaching tennis, then I'm not going to have what I want to be successful, and our program's not going to be as well taken care of. So I kind of got the wheels turning in my head. What can we do at Presbyterian College to make a great experience at a match? And so we have this big field behind our courts that we call the Ponderosa. It's been called that for over 100 years. It's used to be the old game soccer field, and now it's the practice fields. And it's really a nice setup to watch tennis. And so we kind of were coming up with catchy names. We used to call it Fill the Hill because there's a big hill and then the flat field. And we kind of came up with this name called Pack the Pondo. And it's really taken off. It's hysterical to me how much people are so interested just because it has a name and we're doing some free stuff. So I had an alumni who gave money that was really excited about the cause to provide food at matches. So, you know, we have pizza delivered right at the start of doubles, and I've kind of told our guys, if people come up and eat one piece and leave, that's totally fine. We just want to create an event where people are excited about. And that's something that other sports have done. I mean, how many people go to college football games and don't care at all about football, but it's just an event. There's things going on. And right. So we're doing free clinics. We're doing free food. Another thing we're doing is kind of an attendance race, which I think is fun. We're selling our T-shirts, which so people are wearing them around campus, so we love that. We sell them for really cheap, and every time they wear that T-shirt to a match, they get a ticket to put in a raffle. And we had free gift cards donated from all the restaurants around here. So it's not costing me any money. I'm actually making some money on the T-shirt sales. And then people at the end, every ticket, you know, you get is your better chance to win a gift card to a local restaurant. So we're not only are we supporting our cause, but we're supporting the local restaurants. And it's a revenue-neutral thing, which I think is the word we need to use when we talk about college tennis. We may not be revenue-generating, but we need to find ways to be revenue-neutral. And so we've kind of done all this, and it's not costing us any money out of our budget, which is important for a small school that doesn't have a big budget. So that's kind of an overview of what we're doing with Pack the Pondo.
And so far, it's being really well received, yeah?
Absolutely. We didn't actually keep attendance statistics before, something I probably should have done, but I just wasn't interested in it. And we've had well over 100 fans for all four of our home matches, which probably doesn't sound like a ton to people, but that's a pretty good deal for a tennis team. And we're playing on the end of campus, and we're doing some crazy stuff. You know, we're going to have a live band for playing a concert during a match later in the year, and that'll be different. But I think it's great for our kids, one, to play in front of people. So we have other teams that want to come to us now because our fans are having such a good time, and it's also just creating, it's a little bit of a distraction, which I think is a good thing. If you can play with a live band going on, then you can handle the pressure of the conference tournament or the NCAAs. So people are loving it. We're getting a great response from the students, which is a huge deal. And now we're trying to come up with ways, how do we better reach the community? Because there's a huge tennis history at PC, and so we're trying to come up with ways to reach out to the community a little bit. But the students are loving it. I mean, all our players' friends are walking around with their PC tennis shirts on and are collecting the tickets and are so excited to try to win at the end of the year. And so it's been fun.
I love it. We've got a caller on. Let me just see who's calling in. It's area code 505-392. Caller, are you there?
I am there. It's Erica Jasper. I snuck off the tennis court.
Oh, hey, Erica. Erica is the head women's coach at University of New Mexico. And like Coach Adam, she is doing some phenomenal promotional stuff with her women's team this year. And I'd actually reached out to her and asked her if she would have time to call in for a minute and share some of what's going on.
Awesome. Well, thank you, Lisa. We should probably give credit where credit is due. I think sometimes having a great assistant coach is definitely key, and my assistant coach, Kelsey McKenna, has really spearheaded us doing a better job getting the word out about our program and also getting the community back out here at the University of New Mexico. One of the reasons I took the position here about a year and a half ago was I remember being a player and coming and playing in Albuquerque and playing in front of this hostile crowd in doubles and thinking, oh my gosh, how are we going to win this match when I was a player? And that's really what we're trying to get back here. Our men's program has been phenomenal for a number of years, and they've got great fan support, but the women's fan support had dwindled a bit. And so we've kind of gone at every angle this year trying to get people out to a match. And we had a big match the other night with Oklahoma, and we had 200-plus people there. So it's been fun to see those rewards, and it's also been fun for, I think, our players to play in front of a tough home crowd for sure.
And so specifically, I know I'm on an email list. I get your emails that you send updates out. How are you collecting those email addresses? And
I do a lot of stealing. And anybody who I like who's in the tennis community and I feel like is important, like you, Lisa, I make sure they're on my email list. But we do a lot of work out in the community. So anytime we do a mixer at a club or some kind of community service project or any kind of volunteering within the department, we're always trying to sign people up for the email list so they can stay up on different team functions, matches, any kind of academic success we're having. And so we probably have close to 400-plus people on that list. One of the other things we did is Kelsey, my assistant, actually put together a volunteer corps. We've got about five people in the community who actually we meet with once a month, once every other month to kind of generate ideas and ways to promote the program, promote the matches. And one of those volunteers, she actually provided us with 200 emails in the tennis community here in Albuquerque to add to that list. So that's been huge, especially in this last month of getting more people out to the matches this spring.
And I know both of you, Erica and Adam, are great at utilizing Twitter and Facebook to promote your team. You guys are great about posting pictures and, you know, posting links to any live scoring that happens to be going on. I mean, do you feel like that's made a difference in terms of attendance and loyalty?
I think social media provides a great vehicle for people to stay up on the program and feel that personal connection. And I think, you know, tennis is an interesting sport, and not to say it's a niche sport, but I think tennis is at an interesting point right now in terms of fan base. And if you can get people invested in your players on a personal level, that's great. But, you know, you can really only do that in your immediate community. And I think what social media does is it kind of opens a window to your program. And, you know, whether it's taking a photo at practice or at a team event, people start to get to know you. They start to get to know your players. They feel invested in the program. They can watch it even from afar. And I don't know how you feel, Adam, but that's really, I think it's been huge for us. And I think it's a really helpful tool that probably I wish I had a little more time during the day to do a better job with.
I would completely agree. We love it. We have fun with it. We actually have two Twitter accounts, so which is probably a little excessive, but I have my own.
See, you're advanced. I like that.
I know we're out there. Well, this one's easy though, because I have mine, and then I actually, this is a bold strategy, but I let the guys start their own this year, and it's all about the promotions, and it's been really fun because a lot of the students and people from around here are going to follow them, who may not follow me, and so we kind of have
great
two
idea.
Different things going on: one for the promotions and one just for the program. So I post pictures, you know, of the guys eating dinner or, you know, talk about the match, you know, say what happened. And then they post, hey, we're doing free this, you know, at this match, and come out and do this. And it's been kind of fun. And I'll be honest, I watch it pretty closely to make sure they're not doing anything too crazy. But they've taken it really seriously. And we do live updates through theirs as well. One of my guys is tweeting updates during matches as well. So that's another way that we use it. But I think you're right on it. It just allows people to get to know the players better. Even though they're not actually getting to interact with them, they feel a little bit more connected, and they're more likely to come out and watch, is our hope.
Erica, what was y'all's experience with the experimental format?
We played 6 matches in the experimental format, and we actually lost 1-4-3, came down to number 6 singles, tiebreaker for the third, 10-8. So you probably think that I was completely against it. I tried to view it in a very objective manner, and part of it was because I sit on the ITA operating committee, and I kind of knew what the committee went through in coming up with something. And so we tried to view it in, okay, did it actually shorten the time? Yes, it did. Did it make matches more exciting? Yes, it did. In terms of maybe personal views or player views, I think it's kind of a mixed bag. I've talked to coaches who loved it. I've talked to coaches who hated it. I think in terms of an experiment, it was a good exercise to go through. I'm kind of excited to see what the next few months hold, because I think now people have some clearer opinions on maybe what we need to do in Division One, and or maybe what we don't need to do, which kind of makes me excited, and I like the engagement of the coaches on it. There were some things that I really liked that I had, I think, and my players did as well, kind of across the board. We actually really liked the new warm-ups, and we had a lot of good feedback from our fans because they kind of knew what was going on, and things started at the same time. So I thought that was interesting, because I actually thought that was something that maybe the players wouldn't like, or maybe universally, like, the fans would think it was strange because it was not traditional tennis. So all in all, you know, it is what it was, and I don't think it hurt us or helped us in terms of preparation for the rest of the season.
Are you glad it's over?
I think at the end of the day, and I'm probably a little more laid back this way, is you tell me what we're going to play on a given day, and the tennis court's still 78 feet, and as a coach, I'm going to try to find a way to win the match. So that's just how I am, and I don't think matches are easier or harder because of the format and what it is right now. You know, I'm always someone who's worked my teams really, really hard, and I always like to pride myself on having a fit team. So for me, playing a long 3-set match, I always feel like it's probably advantageous to me in my program. But that being said, I had some good pressure players, and so I actually felt like the 10-point breaker benefited certain players too, so it's kind of a mixed bag. But as long as the court's still 78 feet, I feel like I can find a way sometimes.
That was a very diplomatic answer.
That's actually how I feel. I feel like at the end of the day, I have one of the coolest jobs in the world, and I'm in love with the sport that I coach, and it's like you've got to view what you've got to do and try to do the best job possible, and you know, whether I like things or dislike things, at the end of the day, it's my job to promote the sport and sell the sport and make sure my team is ready and engaged. And that's one thing I think I'm really proud of my players, is regardless of what we played on a given day, I've gotten an unbelievable effort from my players. And I hope that's a reflection on my coaching.
I'm sure it is. Well, it'll be interesting to see what happens as a result and you know, to see if other coaches kind of follow the lead that you two are definitely on the cutting edge of in terms of marketing your programs and engaging the community, because it sounds to me, and from Adam, especially from what you were saying, that, you know, like you said, if the university president drives by the courts and sees the stands full of fans, how can you recommend cutting a program that your university is so invested in and, you know, that's so well loved? So the more people can pick up on these different types of marketing tactics and promotional tactics and fill their stands, maybe we won't have to bastardize the scoring system and can keep things as they should be, in my opinion. And I'm not shy about saying how I feel. I hate the experiment. I hate it. I hate it in college tennis. I hate it in junior tennis. Play 2 out of 3 sets. That's the way it's supposed to be. But, you know, let's educate the fans. Let's not dumb down the game for them. And, you know, and as long as you guys are willing to put in that extra effort to get creative and find ways to get people there. To me, that's the win-win.
Go ahead, Erica.
Oh, I would just say, Lisa, you really hit the nail on the head, and I think at the end of the day, like, this isn't a college tennis problem. This is really, like, a tennis problem, and across the board, we need to be selling and marketing tennis, and what a great sport it is, and encouraging fans to come out, because I don't know how you guys feel, but I feel like when people get out and watch our matches, they fall in love with the sport, and they actually fall in love with college tennis even much more so than tennis itself. And, you know, I think the more we work in those areas, I think things like format and all that stuff ends up vetting itself out, which is kind of what we hope it does.
I completely agree with that. I think there's a list of things that we need to fix in tennis, and I would say that the format's down towards the bottom, in my opinion. But what this exercise has done is it's made a lot of us get up and start doing things, and I think that's huge. And there's a lot of idea sharing going on right now. You know, every coach we play right now is going, hey, tell me about Pack the Pondo. How's that working? And then I'm like, oh, yeah, I saw on your Twitter you guys, you know, had this sorority come out and do this event. And so there's a lot of ideas being shared, which I think is great for the sport. And I think it was needed. I think we needed something to get us going and get us to realize, yes, our job is to coach tennis and to help our student athletes become, in my case, better men. But at the end of the day, I also have other responsibilities to the university and to add value to the school. And so that's been helpful for us.
Yeah, and I couldn't agree more. I think, if anything, this has been a great wake-up call for us as coaches. And I do agree, there's been a ton more idea sharing. There's a lot of great coaches out there in all divisions who are doing a phenomenal job, and I think now they're getting the opportunity to share what they're doing well. And I think you brought it up too, social media is very helpful for all of us. We can see on Facebook and Twitter what our colleagues are doing, and people are happy to share that information, which I think is great. And I think people are motivated to make our sport better right now, which honestly, when I got into coaching, I don't think that sentiment was as strong. So that's what's probably very exciting.
Well, and for both of y'all, you played college tennis, each of you played. And do you think that as former players now in a coaching role, it gives you a different perspective than maybe someone coming in who never did play college tennis?
I think for me, that's where my perceptions about the importance of the format come from. Just because I played in high school, I came from the state of Georgia, so in high school we played no ad. And I just, that was probably my own personal problem, which I guess the problem when you start discussing format is we all have our idea of what's going to help us. And as much as no one wants to admit it, if I think I'm good at doubles, then I want doubles to be played first worth 3 points each or whatever that may be. But I think my personal view of the format comes from being a player, and the issue that we have is we have some people that are impressing their ideas on college tennis who don't actually never played it, and so that's why we've had to get up and do these things. That's why the ITA mandated some of the things that they did. But for me, I think that the format is really important, and that's just from playing it. And I played 2 years of D2 where doubles was worth a point each, and then 2 years of D1 where it's just one. And so we've played some of the different things, but to me, ad scoring is my first and foremost thing that we got to hold on to.
Interesting.
Yeah, I think maybe my experience makes that's why I'm somewhat open-minded, because when I played women's tennis, we actually made the shift from the 9-point match where doubles was second to the 7-point match where doubles was first and worth 1 point. And so I went through that change as a player, and I remember thinking at the time it was such a huge deal, and by the time I finished playing, I kind of forgot that we'd used to play 9-point matches, whereas we made the switch initially, it was awful and I didn't like it and all these different things. And so maybe that's where my perspective as a coach comes. At the end of the day, tennis is tennis, and you try to do the best job you can, and you try to find a way to win. But, you know, I think too, and I don't really know in other divisions, but most of my colleagues in Division I, a good percentage of them played college tennis. I think that's probably why we all stayed in it. I know for me it was like, why would I ever want to leave this? This is the best thing ever. So I do think most people have, you know, the good of the sport at heart. And I do truly believe that.
I would completely agree with that.
Yeah, I mean, that's key, because I think that for the kids who are, you know, looking to play college tennis, and I mean, not to mention the ones that are already in the system, but the ones coming up, like my kid, you know, they want the sport preserved. They want the integrity to be there. They've given up an awful lot through the junior years to reach the point of being able to play at the collegiate level, and they want to play the sport they know. They don't want some, you know, incarnation of the sport that dumbs it down or makes all that hard work really not count for as much. And like, that's the frustration that I'm hearing from the players themselves. And so it'll be very interesting to see how this all winds up playing out. And like I said, I'm glad the experiment's done for this year. Let's get back to tennis as we all know it. All right, well, moving on, you guys. And Erica, thank you so much for taking time to call in. Good luck to your team.
No problem. Thank you so much. And Lisa, you do such an awesome job. It's been so fun getting to know you both when I was working at the USTA and now. And I appreciate your support and love of junior tennis and college tennis, you know. And frankly, we need more people like you who are interested in excited about the sport and care a lot about it. So I really appreciate you asking me to call in today.
Well, thanks for doing it, and I'll be watching you guys. So go out there and kick some tushies.
All right. We'll try to get some W's this weekend. Thanks, everybody. Bye.
All right. Adam, let's jump back in and focus on the PC program a little bit, because one of the things that really jumped out at me is you guys have a really high GPA as a team, and that's something that you told me you really take pride in. And I want to just ask you, as putting my parent hat on now, when you're looking at potential recruits, what percentage of kind of the package is GPA, SAT score, ACT score, and what percentage of it is tennis skill or tennis ranking or a tennis rating?
I think for us that answer is very, very different to other schools that we compete against. And there's a couple reasons for that. One, PC's always been known as a very good school. So that obviously affects the type of student-athlete you're going to recruit. I can't get the bad students into school. So I guess ultimately if you're asking, to be honest, the GPA is almost in some ways more important, because for me to even look at a kid, he's got to be a good student. And then the other piece of the puzzle for us is we have historically not been fully funded at 4.5 scholarships, and we've been a little bit off of that. Hopefully that's going to change in the next couple of years if we can keep doing well. But historically we haven't been there, and so PC does give academic scholarship, and so I have to find kids that have the academic scholarship. So I'm oftentimes choosing between two kids. Hey, I think this kid's the better player, but this kid is going to get some academic money here because he's very, very smart. I have to go with the kid who's going to get the academic money because I don't have the scholarship money to make it work otherwise. And to be honest, I think that's been a blessing. Obviously, I have to think that. But we just get these great students. I meet with our kids every month to talk about their grades and then their tennis goals and life outside of tennis. But the main part of that is to talk about their grades, what they have coming up and what they need help with, if they need tutors or whatever that may be. But it makes my job so much easier because I don't have to worry what's happening in the classroom. I get to help them, and we have people here whose job it is to really help them. It makes my job a lot easier because I'm not so concerned. So when it comes to recruiting, I would say for me personally, it is every bit as important, which I know parents are loving to hear, and I apologize to any kids out there, but that's how it is for us.
I mean, I think it's important for people to understand that, and you know, you're not the first person, you're not the first college coach to say that to me. We hear that a lot, and I think it, you know, what I'm hearing, and it's what you're saying as well, it just makes your job so much easier when you don't have to worry about whether or not they're going to be able to handle the academic pressure.
Right. And yeah, it's important, too, for a program like ours who wants to really make them better as players, because that takes a lot of time. And so if they can't handle the time of being a student and being an athlete, then it's not a good fit. And so if they're questionable on whether they can get into school or whatever that may be, then they're not going to be able to be a better tennis player and not be able to put the time into it. And so that affects greatly the next 4 years as well.
You mentioned that PC isn't fully funded. For people that aren't familiar with that term, can you explain what that means?
Sure. The NCAA in every sport sets a limit on the number of scholarships that can be given. And so, like we talked about before, with Title IX, they're trying to get equal scholarships for men and women. So on the women's side, you're allowed to give 8 scholarships, and on the men's side, you're only allowed to give 4.5. And the mistake that I get time and time again from parents when I tell them that their kid's not going to get any money from us is, but you're allowed to have 4.5 scholarships. And I always have to remind them, yes, I'm allowed to have that from the NCAA, but we are not at that point as an institution yet where we're doing that. I think that we're going to get there, and I'm hopeful about that, but I think that too many parents see, oh, women's tennis, there's 8 scholarships, so if my daughter can swing a racket, she's going to get a full ride. And there's very few teams at the mid-major level that have 8 scholarships. It's unbelievable to me how many teams don't have it, and it goes back to everything we've been talking about. We don't bring enough revenue into the school to make it worth it for the school to put that money in. But just because we're allowed 4.5 doesn't mean that every school has it.
Okay, so what has to change for that funding to come through? Whose decision is that? How does that work?
Whew, that's trying to get me in trouble, Lisa. No, ultimately the way it usually works is the administration of a school will designate a certain amount of money to go to athletics. And obviously when you're talking about your bigger sports, the president and the board have a lot more say. And so one rule football's made that has helped them is in order to play the big games, the big revenue-generating games, you have to have a minimum scholarship amount. So they have a cap of how many you can have, which I believe at the FCS level, which is what PC is, it's 65. But they set a minimum and say, if you don't have this, you can't go play Clemson and get paid a ton of money to go play them. And so what happens is the school obviously wants to get the money, and so they prioritize those sports with their funding first, and then it trickles down to the rest. So ultimately, we have to have a great team culture. We have to have kids that are impressing the rest of the school. They do their schoolwork. They work hard. And then at the end of the day, you got to win some matches. And hopefully if you can do that, which we've been fortunate enough to do in recent years, then the administration can look at you and go, okay, our men's tennis team is pretty good with very little. I mean, up until 2 years ago, I'm not shy to say that up until this year, my office was in a trailer. So I'm bringing in these 5-star recruits, and I sit down with them. They sit on my couch, and I'm telling them how much we care about tennis, and they're, like, looking around. And, you know, fortunately, we have a big, nice office now, and the facility's looking a lot better. But it ultimately comes from a priority of the school, what's going to help the school. And so where we're at, because of our strong tennis history from the early years, is they want to say, hey, tennis is a sport we can be very good at. So that's something we want to put money into.
So where are you on the totem pole of sports?
At PC?
Yeah.
That's a good question. Ultimately, you know, it's kind of like a salary. You don't talk with people about what you make because it just doesn't end well for anybody. Someone ends up jealous and someone ends up feeling pretty good. So I, to be honest, I don't know where other sports are. I guess I could say I think we're moving up that totem pole with having some good years. But I could only speculate as to where we are. Obviously, you're always going to be behind football and basketball, and the hope is that you can get up as close to those guys as you can. That's the goal.
Sure. And, I mean, apparently it hasn't hurt you that terribly because I know, like I said at the beginning, some of the kids that play for you, and they're pretty solid players, and they chose to come to PC, and they chose to come play for you. So money isn't holding you back necessarily from getting some really high-quality young men.
Well, I appreciate that, and that is the absolute truth. You know, we just have, I tell people, you know, like Erica said, she just loves going to work, and I just have great kids. You know, so they lose, it's hard for me to get mad at them. You know, I thought we played very poorly yesterday, but I'm like, these are just great kids. They're doing everything I ask them to do. And so we've been really fortunate. And what people don't understand is at the end of the day, yeah, I could have some more scholarship money, and then the word I would use is buy recruits. But that kid's not going to come in and do everything he can for the program and do everything he can for me. He's coming because he's getting paid in scholarship money. It's a strong word, but getting paid in scholarship money. And so we have a group of kids who want to be here. And so it makes a great team culture. That makes them work that extra bit harder. They all have a chip on their shoulder because they say, look at all these fully funded schools around the Southeast who ignored us because we weren't, quote, good enough. You know, and that's the case with my number one guy right now. I mean, he was, I think we were the only Division I school who offered him, and I believe he's 8-2, 9-2 right now in the year, playing number one. He's played number one for 4 years, and nobody offered him any money. So we have this special group that says, hey, nobody wanted us, so we're just going to go out work them. And it's a blast to work with kids like that, as opposed to the kid that goes, oh, well, you're offering me this big scholarship, so that's why I'm here, and I'm going to do the minimum to get by.
And do you think that happens a lot? I mean, I guess it probably does with the top kids who are playing one program off another in terms of money and benefits and that kind of stuff. But do you see a lot of that out there?
I think when I first was an assistant here, I thought it was all about money. I thought we had to get people to the exact scholarship amount of our competition. And what you see is that the 4 years you spend in college are so important that if you can win people to yourself, which we've been fortunate enough to do, and win people, most importantly, to the team, because they're what matters. Doesn't matter how great the coach is and how pretty the campus is. If the guys aren't like you and wanting to work hard and wanting to get better or whatever you're prioritizing, then it doesn't matter. And so they've done a bunch of research recently that shows that people are willing to pay for a great experience, but you got to give them a great experience and you got to really care about them. And so I think that we've seen less and less, as our team culture has gotten stronger and stronger, we've seen that the money becomes less and less important.
Interesting. If you could give one piece of advice to the parents who are listening, who are, you know, at getting ready to start the recruiting process with their child or, you know, are close to that, what would that be?
I could give a lot of advice, but I think the number one thing I would say is – they need to be more proactive. Too many kids sit back and wait for big schools to come to them. And the reality is every college tennis coach, we're all looking for our top couple guys. And after that, we can find plenty of guys that can play 4, 5, and 6. But we're all looking for that top couple of guys. And so whether it's right or not, those are the kids we're reaching out to early in the process. And those are the kids that we're going after. And I would say it's okay to reach out to the coach. I would say make sure it doesn't look like a mass email, because I get those every day. I get a bunch of them every day. Some kid just looked up a bunch of schools and emailed all of us, you know. But it's okay to reach out and say, hey, my kid's right here. What do you think? What are his chances? Can we meet with you? And I think just getting in front of the coach helps a lot, because then your kid gets to hear where he's really at, where he needs to go. But so many people are waiting for the coaches to come to them. And I think that we're only looking for a couple of top players, and then we need other spots. So come be a guy who takes that spot as opposed to somebody who waits for it.
And do you want to hear from the parents, from the player himself, or both?
I think it's great to hear from both. I love to see we have a guy on our team right now. When I was recruiting him, you know, his dad, I just thought, was the perfect tennis parent. You know, he had a strong presence, but he was out of the way. He let the kid do his thing. He let the kid do the recruiting process, but he was there. He came along. I think there's a nice balance there. Ultimately, the kid has to take the ownership of it, but I want to know the kind of family they're coming from too. And so we've had situations where the kids handled the whole thing, and then at the end we start talking about money, and I'm trying to work with these parents about the scholarship, but I don't have much of a relationship with them. I got a great relationship with the kid, but I don't have much of a relationship with them. So I think it's okay at the start, in my opinion, for the parents to reach out, because the kids, just to be honest, most of them aren't going to do it. It's not important to them until their senior year comes around and everybody else is committing, and then they go, oh, I should be doing this. So I think at the beginning, the parents need to drive the boat. They need to say, hey, we're playing a tournament, and we're going to be going down I-26 right past Presbyterian College. Let's call and let's go for a visit. And then once that starts happening, then the kid's going to take on more ownership and go, oh, I met that coach. He's crazy. I don't want to go there, or whatever that may be, you know. hopefully they don't say that. But I think at the beginning, the parents have to push the kids into it a little bit. But the kid at some point has to take ownership. I have a lot of kids that I'm wondering if they're really interested or if it's their parents who are interested, you know. And some of that's the kids probably aren't realistic as soon as the parents are. That's why I think the parents can start it.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. And do you like getting video from the kids?
Absolutely. I've always said whenever I retire from college tennis, which is going to be a long time from now, but whenever I do, I'm going to start a company that makes videos for people because the videos drive me nuts. Everyone zooms in on their strokes, which we want to see, but I got plenty of kids that come to my camps here that can't keep three balls in the court, but their strokes look pretty good. But I love when they send videos, you know, 10 minutes or under, and show me where the ball's going. But the videos are very helpful. Unfortunately, the rankings drive the start of the process, whether it's, once again, right or not. Just it's a market value thing, you know. And so at the start of the process, ultimately the rankings drive it pretty heavily. But then it really becomes about the kids. So the video is definitely helpful.
And are you the kind of coach that likes to see late bloomers? Are you looking for people that you can help continue to develop their game, or do you want somebody who's ready to jump right in and go, or a mix?
I want somebody who's ready to jump right in and go and is a late bloomer. Can I get both?
Yeah, absolutely.
That's I guess what we're all looking for. But I guess the trick with the recruiting, and it'd be good for parents to hear, is that everyone claims to be a late bloomer, and that makes it pretty tough for us. You know, every kid that emails me and says, "Coach, I'm 400 in the country on tennis recruiting, but I'm a late bloomer and I'm coming strong," and I just get that email a lot. So I think there's got to be something to show that they're actually a late bloomer. But we've had a lot of success with guys. The guys just mature a little bit later, and so we've had a lot of success over the years with players who maybe weren't that heavily recruited, but they came into tennis late. Or I have a kid this year that's playing for me that nobody thought was going to be any good. Because he was a two-sport athlete, and it really probably hurt him in the recruiting process, but he's made a huge jump with his tennis since he's been here. And so he's a late bloomer, and there's lots of reasons for it, but I guess my caution to parents would be is that every kid has an excuse for their ranking being low. They've been hurt, they've been this, and they've been that, but absolutely the being a late bloomer, developing later is a huge help for them when they get into school. But they also have to have the work ethic that goes along with it. And every kid that comes and sits in my office tells me, "Coach, I'm going to outwork anybody you got on your team." I've yet to find one that can outwork me. That's what I'm waiting for. That's when you know you got somebody special. But they all say they're going to be outworking everybody. And to be honest, I don't see it very much. And I think that's why we don't have very many internationals. We have three this year. But in some ways, that's why coaches go international. I think it's important for parents to hear that, because the international kids just work harder in a lot of ways. And I know that's a generalization. That's not always the case. But for the most part, the kids that we've had here that have been international kids, they're the ones that want the extra hitting, and they're the ones that want to get better. And too often our American kids have just kind of been handed everything, and so they keep playing 10-point breakers. That's only going to get worse.
Gosh, seriously. Seriously. Well, I really appreciate all the information, and I know my listeners do too, especially those of you out there who are creeping up on this recruiting thing. It can be overwhelming, I know. I feel it, and my kid feels it. You know, all of a sudden, everything that you've worked for is coming to a head, and it's like, okay, am I going to make it? Am I not going to make it? You know, this is kind of the true
right.
test. And it's a little scary. And I think it's great that there are coaches like you and like Erica who are willing to share your information. You're willing to be open about what it is exactly that you're looking for and what you're trying to accomplish. And I think as parents, we need to be asking the right questions when we talk to the coaches, and we need to help our kids learn how to ask the right questions so they wind up at the best program for them. And what's good for one kid isn't necessarily good for the next. So the good news is there still are plenty of great college tennis programs out there. The bad news is, you know, they're starting to disappear a little bit, but for the kids that are in it now, there's still lots of opportunities out there, and I just want to say thank you to you, Adam, for being such a great guy and sharing your knowledge with all of us.
Well, I appreciate it. It's been an honor to be on the show, and it amazes me how few questions I get asked. You can get to the end of the recruiting process with these kids, and they don't know the questions to ask, and so they don't ask any. And I would tell kids, ask as many questions as possible. Ask about the dining hall. Ask about the guys, what do they do on the weekend. Just ask questions, because the more you get the coach to talk and the more you get to the team to talk, the more you're going to really find out what they're really about. Anybody can put together a couple-minute sales pitch. But I'm amazed at the limited number of questions I'm asked from kids.
Well, that's another great tip. All right, parents, take notes. Ask lots of questions. Get your kids to ask lots of questions. It's important. Well, Adam,
that'll really impress the coach when the kids do.
There you go. Thank you again for being with us. We're at the end of the hour, and I appreciate so much all the information you've shared with us. I'm really hopeful that the ITA and the USTA make the right decision in terms of format for the college game and keep the integrity there and let our kids showcase what they've worked so hard to do. So good luck to you, good luck to the guys, and you know I'll be keeping an eye on y'all.
Thanks so much. We enjoyed it.
Great. Have a great week, everybody.